One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson. Welcome to this Thursday edition of the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser, as every day, Monday through Friday, at our new time, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting Tucson to its best possible future. We have a potential that I think we don't realize a lot of the time, and we'll hit on that in this show. But what we can do in this community, I think, is above and beyond what a lot of us realize. But what I think a lot of us do realize is it's going to take some work on some key areas to get there. And that's the stuff that we talk about here on this program on this Thursday edition. I had a fun time putting this show together. It's just you and me, Tucson. Today we're going to talk about some Tucson stuff. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to jump on and jump in and be a part of this show. As I was putting this together, something really struck me as funny. Let me give you the lay of the land, as we say, and we'll jump in. This generation is moving to urban centers and are heavy adopters of technology. And I'm not talking about millennials. I am fascinated by the generation that I'm talking about and what I'm seeing, but it's not millennials. We'll get into that here in this show. Four qualities of successful cities. I kind of teased this yesterday, and I got some feedback because I asked some friends on social media to grade Tucson on the four qualities, the four metrics of successful cities. It's a guy who went around to a bunch of cities, mid-sized cities, and said, "What's working here? What seems to make things click and go and move?" And he narrowed it down to four things. Right? That's always a dangerous statement. Narrowed it down to just four things. We're gonna take that with a grain of salt, but it's still interesting conversation. I'll give you those four, and we don't have a guest today coming into studio. It's just you and me, which means we have a lot of time to get into this on our live line at 790-2040. I also want to take a look with you at the future of local education. I was talking to a friend yesterday who was talking to a friend of his who's smarter than both of us, and he and I would both agree with that, saying that really education, how it's done, hasn't really changed much over the last couple of hundred of years. And what does the future look like? And this field called ed tech, education technology, is starting to kind of point the way at what the future might look like. So I want to throw those things your way, Tucson. We'll get your thoughts. We'll have a chat around it. And that'll be our show today. The generation that's moving to urban centers and heavy adopters of technology, four qualities of successful cities, and the future of local education. So let's see, where do we want to start? Let's go with the generational topic. We'll get it kicked off this segment, and then maybe we'll finish it in the next segment after our first break. But this article was passed on to me. It's called Bye Bye Boca. This generation is flocking to these U.S. cities. I guess I can't keep it a secret anymore. The actual title of the article is called Bye Bye Boca. Retiring boomers are flocking to these 10 U.S. cities. It's a trends article out of the realtor.com platform. And here's how it starts. This is interesting. Walk with me through this because this caught my attention. What's your personal retirement plan, or maybe retirement fantasy? Is it A, sandy beach community with a chill vibe and lots of frosty drinks? Is it B, a senior-friendly suburb with shops, pickleball courts, multitudes of doctors, and temperatures that rarely dip below 90? Is it C, a sprawling one-stop-shop retirement community Or is it D, a city with, well, everything a city has to offer? Spoiler alert, more and more baby boomers these days are flipping the script and opting for D. They're ditching the stock notions of retirement from previous generations and seeking to spend their golden years in urban areas that have walkability, great restaurants, culture, good public transport, and decent prices. Pretty much, I'm sorry, I can't finish that without laughing. Pretty much the same things that America's other ginormous demo group, millennials, crave. The difference is more boomers can fit the bill. I'm going to go through the list, right, because our region's mentioned in it. But I can tell you that downtown Tucson in the last 5 years proves this point. You could just say, you know, and this thought went through my head for sure. It's realtor.com, right? They're going to want to sell you option D. I get it. But downtown Tucson in the first few years of its development, so I would say maybe not as true, but certainly very true in the last couple years, but probably the 4 or 5 years before that, anyone who was involved in downtown Tucson would tell you that the dominant demographic moving into the city center of our community was the retiring boomer generation. Unbelievable. So Tucson kind of backs that up. So they list which cities are experiencing a baby boomer boom, right? Number one, Tucson, Arizona. right? When I start going through lists on this show, if you've been listening, I say number one. Very few people now think that I'm going to say Tucson, Arizona, because usually we're at the top of the list if we start at the bottom going up. I mean, it is what it is. But number one, Tucson, Arizona is on this list. Of course, our many days of sunny year, reasonable cost of living. If you have the money, right? We talk a lot on this show that the cost of living is not as attractive as it used to be, especially with what working individuals and working families are making in the community. It talks about retirement communities. It talks about the Sam Hughes neighborhood. It talks about Broadway Village. It talks about, you know, a lot of the things that we know to be true. And they, of course, highlight Sam Hughes for it being a 10-minute trip from downtown, so on and so forth. This and another topic I'm going to get into kind of had me thinking in my head as I was prepping this show is, will the real millennials please stand up? I have thought for a while, and I think I've mentioned it on this show, that even though millennials and boomers get to play this culture war together, our two generations are actually really similar. Right, really similar. I have a friend who did a generational exercise at a retreat a couple of years ago, and they put up generational criticisms. Right, this generation is XYZ. This generation is XYZ, and they asked the audience, "Well, which generation are these criticisms talking about?" And most everybody thought it was about millennials. Actually, when it was revealed, and this was the fun part of the exercise, that it was documented criticisms of the baby boomer generation when they were in their 20s and 30s and 40s. So there's a lot to back up that statement. I'm really not being funny, that boomers and millennials are actually very similar in a lot of ways, although you wouldn't know it underneath the culture war. I'm reading, I'm not summarizing, right? I'm reading a direct quote. Realtor.com, option D, retiring boomers are moving to city hubs for the exact same reasons you hear the pundits at least talking about why millennials are moving to urban centers, urban cores. Now, of course, we have Green Valley, we have Sahuarita, we have Vail or Valley Marin. I mean, we know the many, many options that are available to those of retiring age and who have retired here in the region. If you are a baby boomer listening and you are either about to retire or you are retired or you are retiring and you're making the Tucson Metro somewhere your destination of choice right now, give me a call in 790-2040. Does this article reflect you and your experience, or those of your peers in the community or otherwise. What do you think of this trend that the real estate industry is starting to see around the country, and actually is putting Tucson as the number one hotspot destination for that reason for retiring baby boomers? Is this article on point? Is it off? What are you seeing? What are you doing? If you are in that age group here in Tucson, give us a call, 790-2040. Will the real millennials please stand up? We're going to talk generational technology when we come back after the break. Heavy adapters or adopters of technology, and I'm not talking about millennials. Come on back after the break. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back to our Thursday show here on 1030 The Voice. You're listening to the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser. Our hour today, this generation is moving to urban centers and are heavy adopters of technology. And I'm not talking about millennials. Four qualities of successful cities and the future of local education. That's what we're up to here on the program today. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to jump in. Spoiler, more and more baby boomers are not choosing the Sandy Beach community, the senior-friendly burb, the sprawling one-stop-shop retirement community. Instead, trends point to them moving to a city with everything that a city has to offer. More and more baby boomers are flipping the script and opting for that. Many boomers, says the founding director of the Avant-Garde Institute Trends Consultancy, Daniel Levine, many boomers recognize that cities are a great place to age. Everything is often within walking distance, from restaurants to hair salons. Add the plethora of cultural activities, and aging in the city is sort of like one big retirement home. Hey, 790-2040. That one caught me as a little funny. Is that funny to you? Give me a call and let me know what you think, especially if you are in that, I didn't come up with this term, silver tsunami. If you are a baby boomer that is preparing or in the middle of or has retired, is this matching your experience and your friends and family around you of that age? America's cities are dynamic engines of change, and boomers are as much a part of that as younger generations. The top retirement cities have higher than average access to exercise opportunities, healthy food options, and parks. They're easier to walk in and have more transportation options. Right, it's so interesting to see generational dynamics at play in this conversation, because we hear all these, you know, buzzwords: walkability, transportation, multimodal, shopping close by, live in place, work in place, right? We hear all these things, and I think the cultural narrative has made it seem a little flippant, a little faddish, a little out there, but we talk about this a lot on the show. We talk about, what does a community look like where people of different ages, 8 to 80, can live and work and play? That phrase alone is its own fad, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean, Tucson. So often we pigeonhole these conversations into a political paradigm or into a urban versus suburban paradigm. It's fascinating to me. We'll see how it plays out, where we're seeing both millennials and boomers want the same things in the same place because, oh, wait, we're human. And whether you are 18 or 80, we're seeing a return to the cities where you can have walkable, livable access to exercise, to culture, to the outdoors, to work, to play, on and on. Just really interesting. 790-2040, is that your experience in Tucson? Because before I move on, this article lists top cities where this is happening. Tucson is number one on the list. Someone forwarded this to me the other day, and I knew I had to bring it up on the show because I think it's fascinating. 790-2040 is your opportunity to call in. Is this on point? Is it off? Fact or fiction? Give us a call. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Will the real millennials please stand up? Millennials stand out for their technology use, but older generations also embrace digital life. Get this, more than 9 in 10 millennials, right? 93% of those who turn ages 23 to 38 this year. Yes, by the way, the oldest millennial is 38 years old. They're probably running the company you work for or will in 5 years, right? These are not high school kids. These aren't even college kids, my friends. These are post-grad, first year in their job, you know, getting their GED, whatever the case may be, 23 to 38. These are millennials now, own smartphones, compared with 90% of Gen Xers, those aged 39 to 54, 68% of boomers. Line up 7 baby boomers in a room, 7 of them, or did I say 7? 10. Line 10 of them up in a room, and 7 aged 55 to 73 will own a smartphone. Here's one for you. 40% of the silent generation, we're talking those aged 74 to 91, right? 4 out of 10 will own a smartphone. Interesting. And I'm looking at millennials and baby boomers mostly here. Percentage of U.S. adults in each generation who say they use Facebook. 60% of boomers use Facebook. 60% of boomers. In 2012, that was 43%. In 2019, it'll be 60%. Millennials, 82% were using it in 2012. They haven't seen much of a jump. 84% will be using Facebook in 2019. Of course, that is above Gen X, boomers, and silent generation. But 4 out of 10, get this, 4 out of 10 individuals, 74 to 91 years of age, are using Facebook. This is blowing my mind, right? 40% use a smartphone. That same 40% are using social media, right? There are 88-year-olds that are scrolling through Facebook on their phone. You know, I mean, this is interesting. Technology always seems to start out to be picked up by either the early adopters of any age or the younger. It's always picked on and picked apart and looked at, and then it's adopted en masse at large. And we're looking at 70, 80, 85, 90-year-olds who are now using Facebook and smartphones at a high rate. Here's another number that I wanted to run by you. And this is the percentage of U.S. internet users who say the internet had mostly been a good thing, right, for society and for you. So those two-part question, has the internet been good for society and has it been good for you? Millennials say, 73% of millennials say, the internet has been good for society. 90% say it's been good for me. 68% of boomers say it's been good for society. 89% say it's been good for me. Millennials and boomers largely agree on if the internet has mostly been a good thing. Now, it's interesting, over the last 4 years, that answer has changed quite a bit. If you asked those same groups in 2019, what you asked in 2015 and 2016, the data shows that people are less likely to say that the internet has been a good thing. And I don't even think that I have to mention why, right? I think it's perfectly clear. I think whatever came to mind when I just said what I said is probably true. I think the last 4 years of elections, narrative, culture wars, it has taken its toll on the American people of all generations. And I'm reading from a Pew Research publication. By the way, did you know I don't know necessarily how Pew Research skews, but did you know the Pew Brothers were kind of the Koch brothers of the early 20th century? I just found that out. They were, the Pew Brothers were oil titans. So I don't know. I have my doubts that more strong ideology transfers to the research organization, but the Pew Brothers were big capitalists back in the 20th century. Just a little fun factoid. Last thing here, they talk about internet usage, and I'm trying to find it here. This is what happens when you find an article that has a lot of data and a lot of numbers. Here we go. Americans were also less positive about the societal impact of the internet last year than 4 years earlier. Gen Xers' view of the internet's impact on society declined the most in that time. Good for them. They're probably smarter than the rest of us. Gen X is the generation between millennials and boomers. And if you've forgotten about them, that's because they're called the forgotten generation. Nobody remembers the Gen X. nobody remembers Gen X in between millennials and boomers. Millennials and boomers got all the love for all the things that we ruined and killed and and created. Every article you see about millennials. Millennials killed bank accounts, right? Millennials killed TV. boomers invented jogging and some pretty hardcore spirituality. So we've come through all of it. I think we're going to be okay, Tucson and America, if you're listening. But millennial and silent internet users were also somewhat less optimistic last year, 2018, and 2017 in 2014. So, as you can see, whether it is the top 10 places that retiring baby boomers are moving to, or internet and smartphone and social media usage, will the real millennials please stand up? Maybe we should just be calling boomers senior millennials, right? I like that better than the silver tsunami. Let's call it senior millennials. I don't know. I have a friend who's in the silent generation who has taken that title on, so maybe it's trademarked already. But Tucson, give me a call, 790-2040. When we come back, the four metrics of not just a good city, but a great city. We'll review that, some comments, get your thoughts, 790-2040. We'll be back on 1030 The Voice. Tucson, welcome back to the Creative City Show. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, and we're halfway through our Thursday edition of the program here on 1030 The Voice. We're daily, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10. We talk about the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. The first half of my hour, of this hour, of our hour, ooh, that's a tongue twister. That's messed up my words for the rest of the hour. Our together is truly ours. It's just you and me here in the studio, Tucson. 790-2040 is your opportunity to jump in. You could consider the first half of the hour, will the real millennials please stand up? This generation is moving in retirement age to the urban core and adopting technology and seeing the internet at rates that are almost as high as millennials. And I'm not talking about millennials. We talked about baby boomers here in the first part of the hour. Your calls are welcome throughout the rest of our time at 790-2040. I'm going to talk about the four metrics to not just a good city, but a great city. I put this out on social media yesterday and got some feedback on it. I want to reprise that conversation and get your thoughts. Let me get to our phone lines first here. We have Chuck on our live line. Chuck, thanks for calling in. You're on the Creative City Show.
Good morning, Zach. Zach, I'm taking you off topic here a little bit.
Okay.
Last Monday, I believe you reported on the fact that TEP was proposing the building of a huge solar panel array and also a wind farm, and together they would provide enough power to run the entire U of A complex?
Basically, yes. So U of A is going to try to run on 100% clean energy. One part is going to be a wind farm in New Mexico that powers TEP, and the other is the solar area here in Tucson. Yep.
Well, after listening to that, I got to thinking, Zach, this has got to cost millions upon millions of dollars, probably tens of millions of dollars, to build something like this. And who's going to pay for it?
Yeah, I'm listening. Yep, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that I'm all for U of A, you know, don't get me wrong.
But for sure.
We, the ratepayers of TEP, are going to be stuck with this bill. You know, that's the only way out. I mean, TEP is not going to do this out of the goodness of their heart. No way. They're going to make money. They have to make money for their shareholders. So I'm afraid it's going to be we, the rate holders, the rate payers, that are going to get stuck with this bill, which means my electric bill, which is already high, is even going to go higher. Am I wrong?
You know, Chuck, you do this a lot on the show. You give me homework. I'm taking you seriously. My only two thoughts, because I wouldn't even know where to start off the top of my head here today, is one, I want to look into this, right? Because I'm curious, and you know, John is nodding his head. I think a lot of people are wondering the same thing. The other is, I've already asked Leah Marquez Peterson, Arizona Corporation Commissioner, once this is finalized, and the ACC has to agree to this first, is to get TEP and her in the studio to ask these questions and figure out how does this all work, and what does this mean, and what does it look like actually on the ground. I think, you know, I hope that conversation will be sooner than later, but I want to look into this. So,
well, Zach, I really appreciate, because you know, it's time we, the ratepayers of TEP, get a little bit of, rate reduction, if nothing else, sometimes. I don't know if you're probably too young to remember, but there was a time when TEP was in a lot of trouble, you know, with corruption.
Yeah.
And we, the ratepayers, bailed them out. And because of that, of course, we didn't have any rate increases for several years, because TEP said, okay, you were good to us, we'll be good to you for about 5 years.
Hmm.
Well, since then, everything has gone sky high. Anyway, Zach, thank you very much.
No, Chuck. Chuck, thank you as always. For any of our listeners who maybe are listeners within the last few months or so, Chuck is our friend here on the show who got me digging way more deeply than my wife would have preferred into HERF funding and road and transportation infrastructure in Tucson. So, you know, when I say, man, you got me thinking, I don't have a good answer, let me go look into that, I actually do that because it's to our benefit, right? We're on the air for 5 hours a week, at least 20 hours a month. This is what we're supposed to be doing, is looking into this stuff and asking the questions and dealing in facts. On that note, this has been bothering me lately. Let me just get this out of my craw and I'll step off my soapbox. I'm okay with disagreements over facts. Right? I'm okay with disagreements, philosophical disagreements over facts, but let's get the facts right. And I am getting more and more frustrated at some of the, how do I put this? There is a talk element to a lot of journalism today that frustrates me a little bit, right? When you turn on ESPN and you turn on most news anywhere, it sounds like the same thing. And a lot of it doesn't deal with facts. And we can have disagreements over facts, but let's get the facts right and talk facts and go from there. Let's deal in facts. So that's kind of my goal on the show, is to deal in facts. If I don't know about something, I'm not going to riff on it. Right? What's that Abraham Lincoln line? I think it's Abraham Lincoln. Better to not say anything and appear a fool than to open your mouth and leave no doubt. Something like that. I operate by that principle. So that's my lawn answer to say, when I tell you on the line, I'll look into it. I'm not just glad handing you over our live line, 790-2040. I really do mean that. Thank you, Chuck, for your call. The lines are open the rest of the hour, Tucson. I just mentioned the number. I'll repeat it again, 790-2040. Jump in, add to the conversation, and listen back to that podcast. I think it was on Monday of this week. It was Monday of this week where we have our Talking Tucson Hour, where I talk about some important news coming out of the weekend into the week. I talked about the University of Arizona is working to become the largest public university in the country to be 100% at a certain level of its energy I think there is an asterisk in there. I just can't think of it off the top of my head. But where a certain, at least a certain aspect of its energy production is 100% produced by clean energy. Wind out of New Mexico, solar out of Tucson. But that was actually a press release out of TEP. Just full disclosure there. It came across my desk from TEP. So I reported on it. But there weren't any, at that point in time, any discussions on if that impacts the local ratepayer or what that does, if that's just a U of A transaction with TEP, or if that spills over to the average ratepayer. So good question. Don't have the answer, but we'll look into it because now I'm curious. Let's. We've got about 2 minutes. I can do it in 2 minutes. I can spill over if need to. But a great city, not just a good city, but here are the characteristics I talked about yesterday. A good city, great city rather, has spontaneous movement, action and initiation, has economic enterprise, has civic enterprise, and its people are optimistic. And a friend of mine on social media and a friend of this show commented and gave number one a B+. Tucson, B+. Great city with spontaneous movement, action, and initiation. A great city has economic enterprise. He graded that a D-. A great city has civic enterprise. He graded that B+. I think that's a good grade. Number four, its people are optimistic. C- was the grade. C- was the grade. He and I talked offline, and we were commenting on how number two and number four are often so closely linked, right? No great revelation here. If you have great economic enterprise that serves a community and its people well, then you have optimistic people. But if you don't, then optimism and discouragement continues to ride high. And so it was interesting to see the connection there, where a D- on the economy created a C- for optimism in a community. I think that's really, really deep there. About to go to my last break of the hour, but I want to leave the phone lines open for that. How would you grade Tucson? How would you grade our spontaneous movement, action, and initiation? Do we initiate things bottom up, or do we feel top down? Do we have economic enterprise? Do we have civic enterprise? Are we civically engaged? I think we are to some degree. It's people are optimistic. How are we doing, Tucson? I wanted to bring that back up today after hearing from you, the listeners, the viewers, the followers of the Creative City Show. 790-2040 is your opportunity to jump on the show here on 1030 The Voice and let me know what you're thinking. When we come back, we'll wrap up with the future of local education, ed tech, education technology. Where is it taking us? How do you feel about it? We'll be right back. Don't go away. Tucson, welcome back to the program. We are flying through this fast-paced hour we do every day here on 1030 The Voice. It's called the Creative City Show from 9 to 10, where we talk about people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. The decisions we make in the next 5 to 10 years will impact our next 50. That's why my show is future-focused, because I think we're at a critical tipping point where what we talk about, the conversations we have, the decisions we make will put us in a position for success, or will put us in a position where we're stuck for the near term with consequences and results that we may or may not be happy with. So I think we are talking together, Tucson. We are spending time on the air here at a critical moment. This is worthwhile. And so I deeply appreciate your calls and engagement. I really, really do. And I say this and I mean this every time that I say it. There is the difference between me doing this here at the 1030 The Voice studio, the KVOI studio here in Tucson, and saying the exact same thing in a dark closet in my home somewhere is the callers. We live for the live local feedback on critical issues at critical moments and critical times about things that matter to us. I think the more we talk together, the better. I think innovation, as my dad would say, innovation comes out of conversation. That's what we're up to every day here. So give us a call, 790-2040. Eight ways ed tech EdTech, educational technology startups, are setting classroom innovation trends. Technology and education is changing how we think about learning and success. You know, it's really interesting how I think macro, right? I'm not talking a district. I'm not talking necessarily Tucson. I'm not talking Arizona. I think I'm talking macro. I think a lot of people realize this, that education often moves slower than the pace of overall change. And I think especially with American education, it's becoming quite clear that our models overall, right, in some sectors and some pieces and some kinds of education models, right, we see these one-offs, that there is this intentionality to keep up with the pace of technology change, innovation change. But overall, many people smarter than me would say, that I've read, that I've heard, that I've seen, that our education is still more designed around the Industrial Revolution, right? And not to drink the Kool-Aid and jump on the train, but we're now in the fourth iteration of an industrial change, right? President Robbins at the U of A, you know, Joe Biden's even ripping off Andrew Yang now at the presidential level, right? There's this presidential candidate on the Democratic side who's made the fourth Industrial Revolution a core component of his platform. I was fascinated to see Joe Biden on the Colbert show the other night. All of a sudden, just overnight, you know, like a switch flip, started talking about the fourth Industrial Revolution, right? So we're in a period of shift and change, and often feels like education doesn't always keep up. So here are some things I just thought I would give you these little factoids of 8 ways EdTech startups are setting classroom innovation trends. Immersive learning is the first one that we're seeing some movement in, where classroom learning is no longer relegated to the chalkboard. Today, students can participate in immersive experiences while learning about everything from specific timelines in history to climate change in Antarctica. Here in Tucson, there's a 10 West Festival coming up in October. And there's hundreds of people coming, hundreds of presenters, people coming from all over the country. Even our mayor is bringing in mayors from around the country to participate in some innovation conversations here in Tucson. But they're going to talk about a U of A professor. It's going to be one sliver of this massive event that spans a week and a half, talking about how he teaches a class with virtual reality. So what he will do is he talks about an element of history, and he has virtual reality glasses that his and experiences that his students go through. It's actually an online class, and he takes them actually, it feels like you're physically there, to actual places through virtual reality to experience what you're reading and learning about. An example of immersive learning, we have people at the University of Arizona who are getting into this already, and good for us. Number two, industry specific learning. I'm not even going to spend time on this one because we talk about this all the time on the show, right? UC Pima Community College doing this, where they're working with our workforce employers to say, what do you need out of your workforce? How can we help you train your workforce, right? Education has been, we're going to teach XYZ, and it's going to be this curriculum, and we've set up this pathway. And if you want a degree, you're going to go through it in this way. And there's value to that. I got a degree that way. It's done well for me. I'm good, right? I'm not a burn the house down kind of guy. But I love what PCC is doing, Pima Community College, to connect with our employers and say, what do you need? How can we train our Tucson workforce for your specific needs? Number two, industry-specific learning. Number three, seamless classrooms. Where you use technology to connect collaborative learning groups from around the world for global topics and trends. Number four, and I'm running out of time. I don't know how that happened. 2 years on the air doing the Creative City Show, and I'm still amazed at how fast time goes. Maybe in year three or four, we'll figure it out. But four, big data. As test scores and attendance persist as traditional metrics for classroom success, seemingly simplistic technologies are creating ripples, using big data analytics to discover new ideas, opportunities, and resources available across the country. AI, artificial intelligence, is going to be a part of this as well. Number six, gamification. Classrooms are coming alive with personalized adaptive learning, basically where there is a, how do I explain this? It's almost, it's not like a video game, but basically students can learn and pass through certain levels and go as fast or slow as they need, but it's gamified with points and so on and so forth. I don't think this one is as new as the other eight. This has been around for a while. Digital safety. This is a little bit less specific education, but more around education. Education is happening more online, more on smartphones, more on tablets. There are startups that are focusing on bullying, self-harm, internet safety, so on and so forth. I was asking a friend earlier today, actually, why does it seem like our younger generations struggle so much with anxiety? Well, you know, in the last 20, 30 years, we have been exposed in a very quick way to some very new technologies that bring a lot of stimuli to us. And I'm a technologist, I'm pro-technology, but I also realize that that there are things that requires our body to do, after I sit down with people and talk about this, that our bodies are adapting and still figuring out how to do. So digital safety is important. I was having that conversation with a friend today, and they brought up that point about how the human body in the 80s and 90s isn't doing what the human body is doing in the 2010s and 20s. I thought it was an interesting point. Number eight, and finally, sustainability and life skills. This reflects back to, I think it was my Friday interview last week, right, with Dr. Dave Cornelius, Five Saturdays, right? We're teaching our young people now not just hard technical skills, but soft skills, right? Startups are focusing education technology around communication, negotiation, finding purpose, staying calm, sustainability design, right? It sounds very buzzwordy, but I don't know how I can effectively explain it. These are really important stuff, right? This may not have been student content for my dad when he was going through school. Other than anecdotes, and I'm sure data points to this, this is stuff that students today need to learn, right? As robots start taking over jobs, it is happening. As artificial intelligence starts to take over the workforce, as our style of work changes, we're going to have to be able to teach our young people not just the hard technical skills, but the soft, what they call EQ skills, right? Emotion quotient, how you interact with people, how you communicate, how you negotiate, how you find purpose, how you stay calm, right? The needs of today's students are very different from the needs of, you know, when my dad was in third grade in, you know, in the farm country of Ohio, right? It's just different. I don't think people would disagree with that. So those are the eight. I just wanted to, sometimes this is just a valuable forum just to say, hey, this is happening. Here it is. What do we think about it? 790-2040 is your opportunity to jump in. Eight ways that education technology is going to change, I think, for the better. And because of the need, right? There's a need for this. That's why entrepreneurship happens. Entrepreneurship doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens because there's a need. So these all point to needs of our local communities to adapt our educational institutions to the needs of today and the future. There are those eight. Doug, Jen, and Victoria are coming up after my show ends in just a minute. And then the Bill Buckmaster show comes on at noon. As always, Tucson, we have one more day together. Friday. Happy Friday Eve. This is Thursday, September 19th. You've been listening to the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser. Come on back tomorrow at 9. Don't forget our new time, 9 to 10 every day, Monday through Friday. We'll finish up the week connecting the dots, making sense of the week that was. Tucson, what happened this week that is notable? What are you focused on? What are you thinking about? What should we be talking about as we close out the week? Give me a call tomorrow. Plan on it. 790-2040. We'll close out the week that way together. Stick around for lots more quality and local talk here on 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care, Tucson.